Oh, that's right. Just had to get everything going here. Hey, I'm Ann Eller here with my favorite Clemson Extension Office person right here, Rhonda Matthews. Rhonda, we had a good time before we started the show today. You know, a year ago we made pickles, bread and butter pickles, and this year we made jam.
That's right.
It's freezer strawberry jam. Made it right here on the table that we are sitting at now. Easy cleanup, easy to do. You want to explain to people how they do it, and then of course they can see the video. The humorous video that we always do.
I love it.
Exactly.
You bet. And you're right. Freezer jam is easy to do. And we made strawberry freezer jam today. You can make it with any kind of fruit. You can make it any kind of year. Insanely easy to do. I always encourage folks to let their kids get in the kitchen and help them on this one. You start out with whatever kind of fruit you want, and as we said on the video, you smash the fruit. So we used coffee cup and or a coffee mug, and we used that to crush our strawberries. And we took a quart of strawberries, crushed them well. We took off those leafy end caps and started with nice clean strawberries. Crushed them until they were a nice, juicy, mushy mess. And
yes.
We took that and mixed it with a combination of 2 tablespoons of instant pectin and 2/3 cup of sugar. And you know, if you don't want to use the sugar, you can actually substitute in Splenda. You mix up those dry ingredients, add them to the crushed
fruit. For 3 minutes.
That's right. And stir it for three minutes. And that was your job.
Yes.
You were my official stirrer.
I helped.
And basically after 3 minutes, you pour them into clean, freezer-safe containers. And you can, today we put them in freezer-proof canning jars, little half pints. And you let them stand for 30 minutes. And then they can either go in the refrigerator, and they're good for 3 weeks if you can imagine them lasting that long. It's so good. Or you can put them in the freezer, and they're good in the freezer. They'll stay top-notch for 12 months, and once you get ready to use them, just move them from the freezer to the refrigerator. They'll thaw overnight, and then you've got them good for 3 weeks in the refrigerator. So they are delicious.
And so easy.
Yep.
Now, you said your kids could get involved and help you. How can the kids help out, Rhonda?
Well, in the summertime when, you know, the fruit is in season and just so nice and soft, I always like to see folks that are telling me that the story always starts out with, my kids helped me smash up the fruit, and essentially that means the kids got in the bowl and they used their hands and scooshed up the fruit, and that was step number one. And that's wonderful, the kids in the kitchen with the parents, you know, hands on and in the food and loving good fresh fruit. You know, that's just the beginning of healthy eating. So that's wonderful. Enjoy that South Carolina produce and get in the kitchen and, you know,
and you can do this
family
with
activity.
Blackberries, blueberries, any type of berry type fruit.
That's exactly right.
Peaches.
And absolutely.
Peaches,
raspberries, yeah. Peaches, blueberries.
Combinations of?
Absolutely.
Okay.
And I liked, for folks that have never done it before, they sell that freezer instant pectin in practically every grocery store, discount store. Just look on that canning aisle where the canning goods are sold. And then if you need even, and the instructions are on the label, but if you want even more help or if you want to look ahead of time, go to freshpreserving.com. And once you get there, look under the tab that's tools, and there will be a pectin calculator there. And if you can dream up the fruit and dream up what you want to make out of the fruit, it'll tell you exactly step by step how to make it. And that, it just, it's like the no-brainer jam and jelly maker.
Wow.
So yeah, I know, it just
there's no reason to buy pre-made. Really?
I'm telling you, if you're growing anything in your backyard that you can make fruit out of, or if you've got a friend that's doing that, yeah, this is just too easy. And you can make it, and this is what we said on the podcast, you can make 1 half-pint jar all the way up to as many as you can imagine. So
sure.
Now, get in there and get going. I mean, it's just too good not to do it.
Now, what does the pectin actually do? Why do you need pectin?
Pectin is what causes the gel to set. Without the pectin, you would just have delicious fruit with sugar on it, which would be good, but it would not be jam. So that's what turns it into jam, or that's what forces jelly to turn into jelly.
Okay. All right. So don't ever be in a jam. Just check out WCRS. Rhonda and Ann will keep you straight going down the right track here.
And entertain.
And entertain. Yeah, we try to be kind of entertaining, too. If, for those that do get to see the video, I want you to know I was sporting my new apron with pearls.
Mm-hmm.
And you had on a special one. Last time we had the Clemson extension aprons on. So
I
we
did.
Know we're decoring up here as we move forward. All right, Rhonda. So we've got we talked about that, and of course that's a lot of fun. That freshpreserving.com.
That's right.
And check that website out if you want more information. If you've got a question about anything that we talk about today, of course you can give us a call, 229-7984. That's 229-7984. Now, Halloween. Thanksgiving is almost upon us, Rhonda.
Yep, that's right.
and of course, a lot of people are going to be making the big meal, and a lot of people are going to be traveling with food and everything. I know one of the things that you want to make sure that people know about is how do you travel safely with food?
Well, I'm glad we're going to talk about this for a little bit. There are lots of families who congregate at mama's house or grandmother's house, and everybody brings a dish to put on the table, and it's kind of a potluck, or a, you know, everybody contributes something. But what that also means is everybody's traveling with some kind of food in their car, and a lot of those folks are traveling a pretty good ways to get there. So that's actually the case in my particular family. I drive a couple of hours to get back to my mom's house, and I'm usually in charge of you know, three or four of the dishes that are going to be put on the table. So if that pertains to you, there's a couple of precautions that you want to take to make sure that the food that you're putting on the table to contribute to the Thanksgiving meal is absolutely as safe as it is delicious. The first thing you need to take into consideration is what is the food that you're traveling with. If it's something like pound cake or breads, things like that, there's really nothing to worry about. Things that are dry and they're very low protein content, they travel wonderfully. But when you have protein content and moisture, you begin to move into a territory where potential bacteria that can make you sick, and we call those the pathogens. Pathogens can grow out when they are at room temperature, or I guess we would say car temperature if you're traveling with it, and if that food stays at that temperature for a prolonged period of time, a couple of hours or more, then the quantity of pathogens, the bacterial growth, will get to the point that it could possibly make someone ill. And if it is a normal adult, you may just have a grumble tummy. If it's an older person or a toddler, you're going to have substantially more severe symptoms. That would be putting it kindly. So the question becomes, how do you do it? How do you carry that turkey or that ham or that dressing that's got eggs in it or giblets in it? How do you travel with that kind of
macaroni
stuff?
Macaroni and cheese.
Mac and cheese, absolutely. Well,
potato salad.
Potato salad would be one.
Yeah.
So, you know, the thing is, you have to either keep it very cold, because the colder a food that's high protein and moist gets, the less any bacteria that's there. Coldness makes them slow down, so they will not grow nearly as quickly. So keep it very cold, or keep it very hot. That's the other end of the spectrum, and heat will kill bacteria. So, since it's not particularly practical to travel long, you know, practical to travel long distances with hot food, you know, at 140 degrees in the car, most folks opt for cold. What that means is cook it ahead of time, cook it all the way, completely done ahead of time, cool it down, and pack it in ice in a cooler, and get it in the coldest part of the car. Now, if it's the dead of winter, like, say, December 25th, if we're that far along and it's, you know, super cold outside, you can put it in the trunk of the car, not up in the car with you where it's nice and warm.
Right, toasty, so,
yeah,
yes.
Yeah, but if it's Thanksgiving and it's kind of, you know, temperate like it is outside now, trunk, inside, it doesn't make any difference. It's about the same. So just make sure that that food stays cold while you're traveling. And then when you get to where you're going, get it in the oven, heat it up, get it tasting yummy again, and then get it to the table, and everybody will enjoy it safely.
You know, I guess this applies to tailgating too, doesn't it?
Absolutely.
I mean, that's a really one that you could have a problem at.
Yep. You've got a 2-hour window to work with, but as long as you stay in that 2-hour window of it being at room temperature, somewhere between 40 degrees and 140 degrees. Once you move beyond 2 hours, that's when those bacteria start growing out of control to a quantity that, you know, you risk getting sick. So, you know, once you push past 2 hours, you're playing with fire.
All right. Well, we are here with Rhonda Matthews. If you've got a question over anything that we're talking about here today, give us a call, 229-7984. That's 229-7984. We'll be right back.
Gold. Gold. More precious than any other time in history. Do you have gold? Do you need cash? Then bring it to SFG. That's Sharp Facets Gallery, 1220 Bypass 72, Greenwood. Telephone 229-6613. Don't forget, we buy diamonds too. Paying the highest prices for your gold and diamonds at Sharp Facets Gallery.
Oh, that's right. We're right back here. Sharp Facets Gallery sitting here talking to Rhonda Matthews. She is a Clemson Extension agent. She does excellent on teaching people how to cook, particularly vegetables and, I guess, meats and this type of thing. She wants to make sure that you don't get sick.
That's right.
That's a huge and awesome undertaking. You know, as much as you eat out, there are times where you just know you ate something that wasn't quite right.
That's right. And actually, that's another hat that I wear. One of the other programs that we often teach at Clemson Extension is a program called Serve Safe. And what that means is we go out and we instruct restaurants, hospitals, nursing home, food service operations that are preparing quantities, large bulk quantities of food, and we certify them as having gone through a nationally recognized and approved food service training. And they're looking next year at actually mandating something like that all the way across the state. So you may see me very little next year.
Don't
if that,
say that
becomes
Rhonda.
The case, I may be hot footing it all over several counties, helping several folks get certified in that kind of program. But you know what that really means is that you know, you're going to have a lot of folks that are trained in food safety, and ultimately it's going to mean that, you know, education is never a bad thing.
That's
it's really
true.
Not, you know. Everybody should be appreciative of education when it's put before them. So,
well, do you ever watch the show Restaurant Impossible?
Every once in a while.
I'm telling you what, when you see some of the things, Rhonda, that are going on in these disastrous kitchens that people are serving food,
a little scary.
It does blow your mind.
A little bit scary.
But what are the type of things, you know, we talked a little bit about traveling with food, but I was just thinking about leftovers because, you know, everybody loves leftovers, and so much food is taken home from restaurants, right?
Yep.
And you put it in the car, and maybe you've got to travel with it, and then maybe it gets in the refrigerator, or maybe it sits on the counter for a while.
That's right.
Even worse. So let's talk a little bit about just being safe with leftovers.
You bet. The whole concept of making sure that your leftovers are safe, whether you're at home or at a restaurant, the same thing applies here as what we said right before we went to break. You've got a 2-hour window to work with. So, you know, try to gauge how long it's going to be from the time you finish your meal until you can get to a place where you put the remainder of that food into a refrigerator. So if you're going home from the restaurant, make sure that you get to the house and get your leftover box back into the fridge within a 2-hour time frame. This probably is not the best time to leave, you know, to leave the restaurant and go buy groceries and run by
shopping.
Walmart and, you know, run down to the mall and, you know, go visit the, you know, everybody in the neighborhood. So just make sure you get it to the to the fridge. And as long as you're there in 2 hours, you should be fine.
In the summer, though, Rhonda, when it's hot? I mean, yep. Does that make a difference?
It does. When the temperature goes up and you're riding that food around, and if it's 90 degrees or more, your 2 hours shrinks down to 1 hour.
Okay.
So you've really got to get on home.
And then I was just reading that you really are supposed to eat your leftovers within 4 days.
Yeah.
Well, who made that rule, Rhonda?
I'm sorry, not everybody likes hearing that. Yeah, 4 or 5 days is really the limit on how long you want to keep leftovers in the fridge. So if you've got something lingering in your refrigerator that you cooked, about 3 weeks ago and and we're not talking about pickles here, and we're not talking about, strawberry jam. We're talking about, meats and high-protein foods, or really even leftover vegetables, gravies, things like that, egg products that have been cooked. Those are the things. 4 to 5 days really is the max on those.
And, you just brought up eggs. When you see, expires by such and such date, mm-hmm. should you really not eat them after that date?
Well,
or what's your opinion?
Yeah, I'm glad you asked. The deal with eggs is after you bring them home from the store, you've got about 5 weeks to keep them in your refrigerator. And then after that,
they hatch?
Actually, there's no roosters in those hen houses. Now, okay. if they're yard eggs from home and you've got a rooster, you may get you may have some interesting things happening. But, not if you put them in the refrigerator. But from the store, no, they will not hatch.
So when it says, you shouldn't eat them after the 5 weeks. These are raw eggs just sitting in the refrigerator. They're really done after that time?
Yeah, you need to go ahead and get rid of them. Plus, the quality has gone down. The safety issue is one thing, but your quality. Eggs, a lot of folks don't realize, egg shells are porous. They have pores in them, so the moisture actually in the egg itself actually evaporates out of the shell over a course of so many days. And the longer it sits in your refrigerator, the less volume there is inside that egg. So if you've ever cracked an egg that's been in there a long time and there was just a dab of egg left in it, that's what happened. The moisture evaporated out of the egg. So
wow.
Yeah.
Wow. All right. So now, what about reheating with the microwave and everything? Okay?
Yeah, it's fine. Just make sure that if you're reheating it, a large quantity of food to put on the table and serve everyone, make sure that you stir it well and that it's heated all the way through. If you don't have a food thermometer to measure the temperature, we really do like to see those food thermometers. We like to see leftovers heated to 165 degrees Fahrenheit. But if you don't have that, our benchmark then becomes hot and very steamy.
Mm-hmm.
So unless you're seeing, just copious amounts of steam coming off of this thing, keep on cooking.
Okay. All right. So, and then what about putting a pot that is hot off the, like you've had it hot and it's still hot and you're just going to take this whole pot of soup that you made
and put it in the
refrigerator?
Actually, a lot of folks do that, that's really a terrible idea.
Well, now we know.
And now you know, and I'll tell you why. There's a class of pathogens, of bacteria out there that will make you sick, and they're called thermophiles. They actually live through high heat situations, and once they come back down to a fairly normalized temperature, they start to grow out and multiply. Well, that's pretty much the exact description of what happens when you take this large kettle of hot food, like a big batch of vegetable soup or chili, or collards is another thing, especially this time of year, that folks will do this with. They'll just take it straight off the stove, still really hot. They'll let it stop boiling, but it is hot,
mm-hmm.
and they'll just put it right in the refrigerator. And it won't, that refrigerator cannot physically cool down that huge pot of food. And you'll get up in the morning and look in that refrigerator, and that pot may still be not hot to the touch, but it's certainly not cold. It's still, it's lukewarm to the touch because that refrigerator just couldn't, It just couldn't cool it down.
You leave it sitting on the stove, take it off the stove and let it sit and
cool
down?
Yeah, what you do is you take that pot and you pour it into shallow containers. And then you can take those shallow containers and slide those into the refrigerator. Don't stack them one on top of the other. That becomes another just large mass of food.
I've done all these things, Rhonda. I am so proud.
I'm going to put you in one of my classes,
Okay.
Anne.
Okay.
But, you know, give them a minute to cool off, and they cool so much faster when you put them in shallow containers. And then once they've cooled off a little bit, slide them in the refrigerator. Another trick that you'll see a lot in food service is if you've got something like chili and beans, hot dog chili, hash, vegetable soup, collards, things that can take this, it's a great idea. Pull that off the eye, let it cool for a little bit, and add a scoop of ice directly to the pot, and it'll pull that temperature down just like that. And if your recipe can take it, that's a great way to pull the heat off of something very quickly. So the other way to pull heat off of something is to put it in an ice water bath. So the way you would do that is move that pot over to the sink, run water and dump ice into that ice water, and then put that whole pot right down into that ice water and just stand there and stir. And that ice water will wick away the heat, and it'll pull the heat right out of there. So, you know, once it's cool enough, then you can pour it up into the container you want and get it right on in the fridge.
So if you cooled it down, you still couldn't put the whole pot in the refrigerator?
You can.
You can.
It's cool.
Oh, okay.
Once it's cool.
All right.
Once it's cool.
Absolutely. All right. We're here with Rhonda. When we come back, we're going to be talking about holiday meats, cooking turkeys, and some of the pitfalls of Thanksgiving. So don't you go away. We'll be right back.
McDonald's presents Confessions of an Ex-Hipster.
I loved cappuccinos, so I put on an itchy turtleneck and grew a goatee. But before I knew it, I was into French films, indie rock, and not bathing. Luckily, I got help from McDonald's McCafe cappuccinos. Now I'm watching football, wearing khakis, even high-fiving again. Thank you, McDonald's.
New McCafe mochas, lattes, and cappuccinos from McDonald's. With fresh ground espresso and real steamed milk, it's all the coffee, hold the attitude. At participating McDonald's.
Visit your local McDonald's in Greenwood and Abbeville today.
Oh, that's right. We're right back here, Sharp Facets Gallery, just looking at some of the pictures we took while we were making jam before the show began. I certainly hope that everybody will get a chance to see how easy it is to make strawberry freezer jam, blackberry, blueberry, any type, and combinations of fruit, which really excites me to think about how you can do combinations like blueberries and peaches.
That would be good.
Yeah, it would be. All right.
You've inspired me.
Yeah, there you go. And that website that Rhonda was talking about where you can go check out how much pectin and how to do all this, freshpreserving.com. Is
that's
that right?
That's right.
Yep.
And if you want to, once you get to freshpreserving.com, look under tools. And there will be, under tools, there will be a pectin calculator. And there's several other resources there, but that pectin calculator is wonderfully handy. So you can use it to figure out how to make all kinds of different products. So.
And unlike the pickles, you don't have to wait 25 days or 30 days. Didn't we have to wait 30 days before we could use our bread and butter pickles?
Yeah.
Yes. You don't have to wait. You can put it in the refrigerator and use it tomorrow.
That's right.
That's right. And the leftover little bit of strawberries and juice and everything is excellent for the cooks who worked hard making this.
Oh, my word. I think we made it in, what, 5 minutes, four minutes?
It was tough. I worked hard.
Yeah.
All right. Well, anyways, we wanted to talk about cooking. You have a thing about holiday meats, not only just turkey,
yeah.
But then we want to talk about why is it that people are so scared to cook a turkey?
Well, you know, if you've never cooked a turkey before, it's a big portion of meat.
Yeah.
And, you know, if you're not an experienced cook, it can be a daunting task. You know, if you've got folks coming to your house for Thanksgiving and you're not super experienced in the kitchen, that can be a very overwhelming thing to be responsible for making that turkey. And everyone always feels the pressure to turn out that Norman Rockwell, perfectly golden
bringing
brown.
Bringing it to the
table. Yep, absolutely. And that's what people always feel is the standard. But, you know, I can guarantee you, if it looks that beautiful, but if it doesn't taste good, and if it's not a safe food, no one's going to ever remember what it looked like. They won't go home and say, you know, that was the most beautiful turkey ever, but holy cow. So make sure it's tasty and it's safe, and you're going to be good to go. So there's lots of different ways to prepare a turkey. The traditional way is what you see on that Norman Rockwell painting, and that is a roasted turkey, and it's actually the easiest way to prepare a turkey. So that's typically when folks call into my office and want to ask me about how do I cook that turkey, that's typically the first set of directions that I share with them, and then we go from there. Sometimes they want to talk to me about frying, sometimes they want to talk to me about roasting. So I'm always happy to talk with them about any of those things, and you know, smoking, frying, roasting, those are all wonderful options. They all turn out a delicious bird. You just got to do it the right way.
Now, one of the things you always read about, Rhonda, is putting tin foil over the top of it.
That's right.
Do we still do that today?
We do it. Yep. We do it. So the reason we do that is because you cook a turkey breast side up, and about 2/3 to 3/4 of the way through cooking, if you don't cover the breast of that turkey, the breast meat tends to dry out. So in terms of quality, you take a piece of aluminum foil and just tent the turkey breast and finish cooking it the rest of the way, and it turns out to be a beautifully golden brown but also juicy turkey. So
how do you decide how much turkey you need?
Good question. Good question. Generally, if you've got heavy eaters, and at Thanksgiving, I think everyone is a heavy eater, buy 1 pound of turkey for each person that's at the table. Or I guess I should say each adult that's at the table. So, you know, if you got 8 people coming, buy an 8 pound turkey. If you got 20 people coming, buy 20 pound turkey. So it's pretty easy math that way. You know, the problem with doing the math part of it comes in that there just almost every single turkey that is sold on the market at Thanksgiving is a frozen turkey, and thawing that turkey out in time is really a trick. The safest way to thaw a turkey is in your refrigerator, but you got to plan way ahead, especially if it's one of the big boys. If you've got a 20 or 22 pound turkey, you cannot thaw that thing overnight. It's probably going to take 5, maybe 6 days to thaw that turkey out. So
you can't go buy it the night before. No. Okay.
So, and the way you need to safely thaw that turkey in the refrigerator is leave it in its original packaging, put it in a pan that's got a ridge on it, like a baking pan, and put it on the bottom shelf of the refrigerator. That way nothing's dripping, no juices are running anywhere, and then you slide it onto that bottom shelf and you just let it sit there. And you're going to plan for about 4 to 5 pounds for every day is what it's going to require to thaw that thing.
What if you get in a hurry, Rhonda? You're running out of time.
Good question.
I've been in these positions, Rhonda.
Well, and so have I. So, you know, and I get those calls too. So the next option is going to be to put some water in the sink. So start with a clean sink and leave the turkey in its original wrapping and completely submerge it into a sink full of cold water. And you can plan on that turkey thawing at a rate of 2 pounds per hour. When you thaw a turkey this way, though, you need to stay with it. About every 30 minutes or so, you need to change the water in that sink. So this is not the time to leave and go shopping. So stay at the house with it, because you need to be changing the water.
Because of bacteria?
That's right. The last thing you want to do is let that water or let that turkey get at room temperature. We all know and have heard till doomsday, you don't thaw poultry on the counter. And that's what that would be the equivalent of. So change that water about every 30 minutes, and that'll be a nice cool environment for that turkey to thaw in, and you can get about 2 pounds of turkey thawed in an hour. So if you've got, you know, a 20-pound bird, you can get it thawed in 10 hours. So you'll be able to cook it the next day.
Provided you stay up all night.
Well, yeah.
Now, is there any difference between a 20-pound as far as taste and, yeah. and you know, you just always wonder, you know, that old bird here is tough or something like this?
Yeah, birds today, most of them are injected. Most of the commercial birds are injected or brined already, and so they're as moist as anything you're going to get. So you don't really have to worry about it being tough or dried out or overgrown. It's what most folks worry about. That's not really, it doesn't really come into play with most of the turkeys that are for sale today. So,
okay.
Yep. You're just as safe with a small one as you are with one of the big ones. Yep.
And now one more question, you know, we were dressing, you know, you used to have everybody
yeah.
always pack that dressing in that turkey. And then
yeah.
today you don't see that as much.
Yeah. Today, most folks do a pan of dressing or a pan of stuffing on the side. And I really like it better in terms of food safety when I hear folks saying that's what they do. If you choose to still stuff the turkey, the right way to do it is to loosely stuff the turkey. You don't want to just overpack that bird with dressing. Once you've got the bird loosely piled inside with dressing, make sure that dressing reaches 165 degrees on a food thermometer and that it's cooked completely. Typically, stuffing or dressing is going to have eggs and sometimes it'll have oysters or giblets, things like that in it. When things like that are incorporated, you want to make sure that it is cooked to a safe temperature, and 165 degrees is the benchmark that you go for. So use that food thermometer and make sure you are safe, safe, safe.
All right. Sounds great. Hey, we're going to talk a little bit more. If you got a question for Rhonda, pick up that phone and give us a call, 229-7984. It is time for us to hear a quick word from our sponsors, and we'll be right back.
Gold dust at my feet on the sunny side of...
This year will be a simpler year. One fine gift to last a lifetime from Mother Earth with love. A diamond to light the way and create the energy to keep your love alive. Only at Sharp Facets Gallery, 1220 Bypass 72, Greenwood, 229-6276.
Oh, that's right. We're right back here with Rhonda Matthews from the Clemson Extension Office. Always a treat to be able to sit down and talk to Rhonda and get some good information. You know, people, we've been having several calls. I got to write this down. You know, it's okay. If you miss any of it, we do have a podcast posted on WCRS1450AM.net. We'll also be doing a video, so if you want to see the humorous stuff going on here while we're talking, it's okay. You can do that too. But Rhonda, one of the questions that has come in is one of the gals was telling us that gravy is a problem for her.
Oh, okay. Gravy is not particularly difficult to make, but if you don't get the steps just right, it can flop on you. So
I think she said hers looked something like grits.
That would be the flop. Well, let's talk about how to unflop it.
Okay.
So the best way to do a gravy would be you start with some kind of fat in the bottom of a pan, and you need to get it very hot. So whether it's drippings or whether it's, you know, any kind of a fat, butter or you know, oil or whatever, that's what you start with, and to that you add flour. And sprinkle the flour over it until that flour completely absorbs the fat, and you stir, and you stir, and you stir a little more. And you're cooking this over about a medium to medium high heat, and typically I'm using a whisk when I do this. That flour should cook until it turns a medium brown color. Once you've got that medium brown color, you start adding liquid typically, if you're going to do turkey and dressing, that's going to be turkey stock, chicken stock, something like that's what normally goes back into the pot. And whisk, 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 whisk the entire time. If you're not whisking during this time, you're going to get lumps, 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 and you got to keep adding that liquid until it gets to the consistency that you need it to be. If you stop short, it's going to be too thick. If you keep going, you're going to get just, you know, watery. So there's going to be a cutoff point at some place, and your eye will tell you this is right. This
now,
is the right thickness.
What if you have put too much water in? How can you fix that?
Well, you can, actually. The easiest way to fix it would be a slurry. And what a slurry is a little cornstarch dissolved in some cold water. Bring that gravy up to a gentle simmer or a gentle boil, and pour that cornstarch and water in there and keep stirring. And in a few minutes, 3, 4, 5 minutes, you'll see it start to thicken up. And once it reaches that thickness that your family likes, some families like it just, you know, like almost as thick as a cream gravy, and some families like gravy just almost like a broth.
Right.
So wherever your family lies on that spectrum, once that gravy gets to the right thickness, pull it off the heat.
Okay. All right. For those that have been having problems with gravy, we hope we have solved your problem here today. But, you know, Rhonda, one of the best things about you coming and sitting down and talking with us is that you are always willing to take people's calls.
Oh, yeah.
If
absolutely.
They're having problems, if you have a disaster going on, it's okay to call you.
You bet.
And what number do they call? How do they get you?
Well, if you call here in Greenwood, the best number to call is 864-223-3264. And I'm sad to say that we have that horrible automatic answering voice that picks up on some, you know, picks up our machine. But as soon as you hear that, dial extension 0 and don't even listen to the automatic lady that's talking. Extension 0 goes to our live secretary, and tell our secretary that you're looking for Rhonda, and she will get me no matter what county I'm in. She'll grab me, and I'll be back in touch with you lickety split. If you, and by the way, if it's an emergency, you need to say so. Because, you know, if it's an emergency, I put you at the top of the list. If it's not an emergency, you go on the list. So let me know how important it is as to where you need to be on the list.
And
so,
that also works for your email.
That's exactly right.
Right.
If it's an emergency, you need to say so in
the tag.
That's
right.
Exactly right. And I have people say, this is an emergency, call me first. And I know. So, but my email is Rhonda, R-H-O-N-D-A, @clemson.edu. So give me a buzz if you need anything. That's what I'm here for, is to help folks with food safety questions. And around the holidays, I get plenty of phone calls, so that's not a problem.
Well, I'm sure you do. But we also wanted to spend just a little bit of time talking about some of the other type of meats that people cook. You know, we always think of turkey, but there's a lot of others that people will be cooking, and this might give some people some ideas of things to do for something different.
Oh, yeah. Well, we have plenty of folks that want to do things like they'll do a beef tenderloin, which is fairly common. I have those calls on a good at Christmas and Thanksgiving. They like to have that tenderloin on the table. That's one that you'll want to cook really no more than 145 degrees, and you'll want to cook it at 325 at the most. We really like to see those cooked at 425, if anything. They cook a little bit better under high heat, and to get that nice rareness on them. Make sure you let them stand before you carve.
Why do you have to do that, Rhonda? You know, they always say that when you're cooking something, let it stand for 5 minutes or whatever.
If you don't let it stand before you carve it, you're going to lose a significant amount of the juice or of the fluid or the moisture that's in there. It's really tempting.
Because it just pours out?
Absolutely. If you cut into pretty much any piece of meat, as soon as it comes off the heat, your moisture is just going to, that as it's cooking, that temperature that's high is just forcing that heat turnover in that meat. And it's not through. The heat is still percolating through that meat. And if you slice into it, it's just going to percolate right on out onto the cutting board. So give it a chance to rest is literally what they call it, and calm down a little bit, and so, it will be moist, and it won't lose
the juice.
Juices.
Won't come pouring.
That's
out of
exactly
it.
Right.
Okay.
We have a lot more folks that like to have a piece of pork on the table, and I'm more than happy to talk with folks about putting a ham on the table. That's common, very common at Thanksgiving and at Christmas time. So 325 is really the cooking temperature for the oven the oven setting. We like to see the internal cooking temperature, the food thermometer, to register 145 degrees on any pork product. That's typically what we're going to recommend.
You know, back in the day, you always used to put the little cloves.
Mm-hmm.
You crisscross the ham,
mm-hmm,
and put the cloves in,
mm-hmm,
it. Are we still doing that?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
You
okay.
bet. It's studded with, a lot of times you'll still see the pineapple rings with the cherry in the middle. Makes a beautiful presentation. The other thing we're seeing more and more of on these holiday tables is a cut of venison, or a cut of wild hog, or wild game is just more and more and more prevalent.
But doesn't it have that kind of wild taste to it?
Yep, and it can. But if you prepare it right, you can come out with just a top-notch portion of just really lean and really, really excellent piece of meat.
How do you get rid of the gamey taste?
Well, you marinate it first. A tablespoon of salt in a quart of water, or a cup of vinegar in a quart of water, and soak it overnight in that. Or if you've got a marinade that you like, a lot of hunters that harvest these animals have got their own homemade kind of marinade, and they'll soak it in that, and that kind of counteracts that gaminess. If you choose to do one of those marinades, make sure that you discard that after it's been, you don't want to reuse a marinade. The other thing that we like to share with folks is the fat that's on wild game tends to be where that gamey flavor is most. And when that fat is not, lukewarm, it is the gamiest taste of all. So
no, this doesn't sound good at all.
Yeah, well, I mean, you have to learn how to work with it. You get rid of the fat and you marinate it, and you turn out a really good piece of meat. If it's an exceptionally lean piece of meat, sometimes you'll see folks wrap it in bacon or oil it really well in order to get that moisture back, because it's just completely lean with no fat whatsoever. But all those wild game products, we like to see them go to 165 degrees on the food thermometer, so that you know any parasites, any foodborne pathogens, any kind of bacteria that is associated with that, have been destroyed, and that food is absolutely safe to eat. That's your minimum. So we like to know that it's completely safe to put that on the table.
Absolutely. Well, you know, you're listening to WCRS right here in Greenwood. I have been here with Rhonda Matthews. One of the things, though, I think we just really ought to cover really quick, because a lot of people are going to be cooking. They're going to be cooking meat. They're going to be doing a salad. They're going to be cooking vegetables. And I know one of the things that you are always very concerned about is people taking that same board.
Oh, the cutting board.
And
yeah,
then using it to slice up those tomatoes.
Yep.
And let's just go over that real quick.
You
just
bet.
Safety.
We love for folks to make sure that they're very careful about how they handle things in the kitchen when they're working with any kind of poultry, not even just at Thanksgiving. Make sure that whatever touches that turkey, no matter if it's the cutting board, the knives, or if it's splashed on the counter some way, make sure that that is washed with hot soapy water and then sanitized. A good homemade sanitizer, and the most economical one of all, is a tablespoon of regular, not the high efficiency concentrated, but plain old bleach. Plus,
that's cheap.
Yes, the cheap kind. A tablespoon of bleach plus a gallon of warm water, not hot, warm water. And you can use that as a sanitizer. You can put it in a squirt bottle and spritz it onto countertops. You can put it in a sink and submerge your items underneath that water and leave them for 3 to 5 minutes, and that'll do the job. So
just good stuff. Good stuff to know. And as you get ready for the holiday season, you want to make sure that it's a healthy holiday season.
Yep. Everybody loves to get together and have a good time, but we also want you to have a safe time.
Absolutely. Rhonda Matthews, thanks so much for coming out today, helping us make our strawberry jelly jam here. Mm-hmm. We're going to have some tomorrow. I just can't wait. It's delicious looking, and it tastes good, too. And as always, Rhonda, I hope you have a great Thanksgiving, and thanks for coming here today.
Oh, my pleasure. I hope your Thanksgiving is wonderful as well.
I'm going to be making more jelly.
Yeah.
All right. Bye-bye, everybody.